We spent last week, and last week was a little bit of a technical glitch, but we spent the time we had last week looking at the end of Perek Tet and the discussion between Daniel, or the message Daniel gets from the Malach Gavriel. And Malach Gavriel comes to him after the tefillah, and he says to him, in response to Daniel's tefillah on behalf for the redemption, for the geula, he says to him, as your supplication began, a word went out, and this was the message. And then he gives him a very cryptic response, cryptic by any imagination, meaning whenever we end up with the resolution of how to understand these texts, none of them are going to take away from the cryptic nature of the response. It's very cryptic, and at the end, we have several ideas, conjectures we're going to throw out, but they are all just that, conjectures. The actual text is extraordinarily cryptic. He says, Shavuim shivim nechtach ala 77s have been decreed upon your people and upon your holy city. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to forgive iniquity, to bring about an everlasting righteousness, to seal a vision of the prophets, and to anoint the most holy place. And then he goes on to say, in addition to these 77s, whatever they refer to, the time that the word went forth to build or rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the prince, should be 7 sevens. And for 62 weeks, it shall be, with 62 sevens, it shall be built again with squares and moat, but in troubled times, uvitzok ha'iti. And after these sevens of 62 sevens, v'acharei ha'shavuim shishim u'shnayim, yikaret Mashiach ve'enlo, the anointed one shall be cut off and shall be no longer. Ve'ir v'akodesh yashchit, and the people of the and the holy city, ve'ir v'akodesh yashchit am nagid haba. The people, the city and the sanctuary shall be destroyed or shall be cut down by the people of the prince that will come. And his end shall be with the flood and the end for the end of the war and desolation. And he shall make a covenant, Shavua Echad, for 1 week, and a week and a half, a Chatzi Shavua, Yashpit Zevach U'Mincha, he shall abolish the daily sacrifices and the offerings, and place a desolation and desecration. And again, all of these times are all very cryptic. We don't know exactly what he's talking about, nor do we really know what the purpose of this message is for.
Excuse me, can you enlarge the text?
I can try a little bit. If I enlarge it too much, I will enlarge it off the screen, and then I won't be able to see it.
A little bit would be nice. That's fine. Thank you.
Do what I can, but then I can't really read it properly. So I'll kind of jump back and forth.
It's very good.
Okay. In the meantime, basically, there are four time frames in this passage. There is 7 or 77s, right? Shavuim Shivim. There's 77s. There is some frame of reference to 7 sevens, Ad Mashiach Hanagid, until the anointed one, 7 sevens. There is 62 sevens, Acharei Shavuim Shishim U'Shnayim, and then some tragedy, Yikaret Mashiach Ve'enlo. And then there is 1.5 sevens. There are four different time frames, and we don't even know if we're talking about days, if we're talking about seasons, or if we're talking about years. So this is where the mystery begins. So I shared with you last week what I would call the classic approach, which is pretty much, I wouldn't say quite universal, but almost universal, which is that we're talking about years, and the basic time frame follows the traditional chronology of Tanakh, or one could say that the traditional chronology of Tanakh is built off of the time frame that is described here, either way, namely that we have 70 years between the first temple and the second temple. And the second temple stood for a total of 420 years. And so between the first temple and the second temple between the exile between the temples and the second temple in its entirety, I have 490 years. And that essentially is the 77. 77 is 490. If I look at that from the perspective of it's 490 years was decreed to be the punishment for the sins of the first temple, says Rashi, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the Gemara in Nazir, and that is the decree that Zaniel is now being informed that the redemption is only going to be part way, because really 420 years for the second temple is part of the exile decree for the destruction of the first temple. And so 490 years, those 490 years includes 49 years till Koresh's decree, more or less 50 years, and then 420 years of the second temple, plus the number of years until the temple will be rebuilt. And so combined, you have the numbers, and they match very neatly, as we described last week. On the other hand, we were left with philosophical mystery, because according to Rashi, the interpretation of the message of Daniel is that he's praying for the redemption. And what he's told is that the entire period of the second temple that is destined to about to happen, Koresh is going to allow the Jews to return to build the temple. They're about to rebuild it in a number of years from then. And all of that, and the temple itself will stand for 420 years. And all of that is part of the punishment for the decree of the first temple, and it is destined to be destroyed. And then all the redemption prophecies will eventually take place, but that'll be thousands of years into the future. And essentially, that's all reference to the third temple. And there's even a Medrash that says explicitly that there is some reference or hint to the notion of three temples. And that's more or less where we left off with that philosophical question. How could the second temple have been predetermined to be part of the sin of the first temple? And so it's almost as if he has no choice. Right? All the sins of the second temple were all like predetermined. That's very complicated to suggest. So we're left with this mystery. What do we do? And that I left you last week, and 42 of you are now on the call, so you will have the brave courage to return. As for the rest of you from last week, I'm going to just mute everybody. As for the rest that are not yet on the call, I hope they will manage to join us either in person or in video. I don't want to leave anybody hanging with a question, a theological question like that. Okay, so enough aside, let's go back to the text and see where we're at. So first of all, I shared with you a very important Rambam. And that is, I'm going to jump down to the... I shared with you this Rambam. And the Rambam basically takes the position that one has to be very careful with prophecies and interpretation of prophecies that seem to predict either the redemption or the destruction or any aspect of eschatological messianic predictions. They are fraught with trouble. And the Rambam's language, the Olam lo yitasek adam bedivrei agadot, person should not engage too much in the interpretation of verses, and the midrashim about these things. He shouldn't make them the primary foundation of their belief. And he should not engage in calculation of the times predetermined for the redemption. Because they don't bring a person to a sense of yira, of fear of heaven, nor of a love for heaven. This is a fruitless endeavor. anybody who is involved in calculation of the end of the times as the numbers reflected in the verses of the Tanakh, their spirit should wither. One should wait until the matter is resolved as it comes about. We'll know it when we see it, says the Rambam. And with that, in one fell swoop, the Rambam kind of puts a very dramatic end to the whole enterprise of these calculations and these numbers, which Sefer Daniel is full of. Yeah. And so I want to share with you, before we move into the actual, go back to the interpretation of the text, I want to share with you a story that appears in a book called Ema Banim Smicha. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with this text. If you're not familiar with the text, you should be. It's a fascinating read. It's available both in Hebrew and in English. I just did not have the Hebrew. I did not have the English online, so I could not do a simple copy and paste for the English translation. But the book itself has been translated and is available in English. And it was written by a Munkacher Chassid by the name of Yisachar Teichtel, and he was a staunch anti-Zionist pre-World War II, part of the Munkach philosophy of opposing Zionism of any kind. And World War II, he found himself in exile and hiding in an attic in Bucharest, and he found himself kind of reevaluating his whole worldview. It's a fascinating story. He ends up writing this book, which is an extraordinary support for building the land of Israel, support for partnering with the secular Zionists, for building the land of Israel together, for a sense, essentially all of the foundations that we refer to as religious Zionism, he expresses in this book called Em Habanim Smicha. It's a complete reevaluation of his worldview, and he does so in a text that is filled with sources from beginning to end. He writes in a number of places that he's writing this book without access to sources, to texts, because he's hiding in an attic, and he doesn't have his access to his library. But nonetheless, that's his story. So it's one of my favorite texts. I actually read it when I was a student in Yeshiva in 1982. And it kind of stayed with me over the years. If you have access to it and not read it, it's worth the read. I'll share with you the story because in one place in the book, he's talking about all these numbers and all these calculations, which of course in the Kabbalistic Hasidic world was very much a part of his milieu. And then he raises the question, well, wait a second, Daniel talks about numbers. Here the Rambam says that if you talk about numbers, your spirit will wither. So he quotes a story of the Malbim. The Malbim, we've done this a number of times, we've looked at the Malbim. The Malbim has many calculations in the book of Daniel, in his commentary, in which he looks at various texts and how the numbers play out. I shared with you some of them in the earlier part of the book. And so the Malbim was himself bothered by this question. And in fact, in his commentary on the book of Daniel, he writes many of these calculations of the Kates, and he was harshly criticized for it. At the time the Malbim came out with his commentary, there were calls to put him into chair, which is its own saga. So the Malbim wrote a public letter.
How come the Rambam himself had calculations of when the
also true? Also true, but there are other yes. But the Rambam doesn't deal with the question. We only know that he did. The Rambam doesn't deal with the question. The Malbim dealt with the question. The Malbim looked at that contradiction and he says, "Okay, I'm going to give you an answer." I don't have a good answer for the Rambam, other than the fact that there are other contradictions between what the Rambam writes and what he did, and a whole different lecture conversation. But nonetheless, the Malbim wrote this public letter in which he himself, and the letter is available, in which he talks about this. He says, how do we justify it? Now, the story the Malbim writes is a very famous parable of a father taking his son on a long journey from their home in Bucharest to the city of Leipzig. And as they're preparing for this journey and the weeks of preparation, and they say goodbye to their wife and mother and the other children, and they are going on a business trip, and the young child has just had his bar mitzvah, so it's a reward for him for his bar mitzvah pshefel, he takes a whip. Anyway, they're going on this very long trip. Several hours into the trip, the son turns to his father and he says to him, "How much longer until we get to Leipzig?" And his father gives him a very stern look and he shuts him down. And he says, and he doesn't even say anything. And he just knew from the look that his father gave him that this was not the time to ask this question. Fine. The journey goes on for several weeks. And several weeks later, the father turns to the wagon driver and he says to him, at the end of the story, Acharei Gimel of Dalet Shavuot, after 3 or 4 weeks, the father asked the wagon driver, "Tell me, Maishala, how much longer do we get to Leipzig?" And the wagon driver tells him, an hour and a half. So the son doesn't understand. He turns to his father and he says, "Wait a second, I asked you the same question 3 weeks ago." So his father looks at him and he says, "My son, 3 weeks ago, you asked me that question. You knew that we were heading for a long journey. You saw the preparations. You saw the tears. You saw the effort we went to. So to ask 2 or 3 hours into the journey, where are we? Or when are we getting to Leipzig? That's ridiculous. That's just that kind of depress you. But now we've been traveling for 3 or 4 weeks. Now we know that we're just a little bit off. We're just a couple of hours away. So now it pays to know how much longer for the journey so we can begin to prepare ourselves for the end of this journey." So the Malbim writes, and it's a classic answer to the question, says the Malbim, "When we first started off on our journey into exile, we knew it was going to be a long journey because the level of the devastation, the level of the destruction, the level of the Churban was such that this was not going to be a couple of years and then we go home." And so to ask then, when is it going to end, is counterproductive. But now, says the Malbim, today we are standing at the verge of the edge of the city of Leipzig, to borrow the metaphor. And so now it is permissible and it is appropriate to ask how much longer for this journey. So the mom's a classic answer. He says, you're right. It doesn't pay to involve yourself in calculations when the calculations are going to put you 1,000, 2,000 years away from the redemption. But 1,000, 2,000 years later, when the calculations are going to put you within arm's reach, then it makes sense to do so. So that's a classic kind of circular reasoning. It doesn't really answer the question, but what it does do is it gives you a sense of the struggle the Rishonim had, both with the challenge and with the anticipation that these texts are kind of dripping with messages. And we want to know what that message is because we want to see, be inspired by it. That's what the Rambam wrote. The Rambam wrote that the reason we don't involve ourselves in this calculation is because it doesn't, sorry, I just lost the place for a second, because it doesn't add to our love of God and it doesn't add to our fear of God. So because it doesn't add to our yearning, it doesn't add to our ahava, so there's no point in doing it. But if it were to add to our sense of reverence and appreciation for the divine, if it were to be able to help us understand history and see God's hand and see the redemption unfolding, and we were literally standing at the edge of Leipzig, then it would be appropriate, says the Malbim, says the Rabbi Smecha, and maybe that was the answer for the Rambam as well. I share that with you because it's just a fascinating insight into this whole circular reasoning about calculations. I just put that out there as a kind of an aside. It's worth noting in this context. It comes back to the question, what do we do with these 770s and these calculations that that Daniil seems to be aware of. So if we don't want to assume, if we're uncomfortable, I should say, with the notion that these 490 years are essentially a decree of the exile to include the Second Temple period, then we have to go back and we have to look at this in some other fashion. And that's what I want to do in the time that we have today. I want to share with you two possibilities. Time permitting, we'll get to them both, but two possibilities. One stays with the calculation of years. But instead of looking at those years moving forward and saying from here, destruction of the temple, forward 490 years, that would include the whole period of the Second Temple, problematic. What this interpretation does is it goes backwards. And it says at some starting point, there was a decree of 70 sevens or 70 shmitas or 490 years. And we're coming to the end of that 490 years. And so from that perspective, we're reaching the period where the redemption is in response to your prophecy, in response to your tefillah, we are reaching that moment when potentially this could all come to fruition. So the question, so this interpretation essentially says, if we go back to a certain starting point, we'll have to identify when it is, and we count 490 years forward, we could get to the message that we're about to embark on the redemption. And that would be the message to Daniel. What that starting point is gets a little bit complicated, so I'm going to try to do it kind of briefly and as simply as I can. It's written up in kind of a cryptic footnote in the Medan Sefer in the Book of Daniel. If you have access to it and want to look at it at some point, you can do so. But basically, he says, let's go back to the beginning of the temple. Let's assume for the moment that we're starting from the early years of the temple, the building of the temple, and saying that from that moment in time, until now, it was sort of a tumultuous period. We know it was a tumultuous period full of ups and downs and sins and repentance and destructions, etc. And so maybe from that point till now has been a kind of a total period of 70 shmitas. And now moving forward, we're about to reach the end of that journey. How would that calculation work? So let's start from here. The temple itself was built in the year 480 from Yetziat Mitzrayim. This is Book of Kings, chapter 6. These sources are on the source page, but I've also given them to you here, whichever is easier for you to follow. I find it easier to follow from the website. So, 480 years from the Exodus from Egypt, this is the foundation of the temples where they begin the building. And that is in the fourth year of Shlomo HaMelech's reign, B'Shanah HaRevi'it, L'Imloch Shlomo Yisrael, Vayiven Abayit, they build the temple. That construction process lasts, if you look at the end of the parak, U'B'Shanah HaAchat Esrei, B'Yerachul, the 11th year, which is the 8th month, the house was finished. So the temple itself, if I go back to the starting point of the temple itself was built in the 4th year of Shlomo HaMelech. It was completed in the 11th year of Shlomo HaMelech. It took 7 years to complete the construction of the temple. Okay? So if you're with me? Okay. What I'm looking for, I should have actually said this from the outset. There are two timetables in this prophecy. There's a timetable of 490 years, Shivuim Shivim, and there's a second timetable. The Tedav HaHaskel, the second timetable is ותדב הסכם עם מוצא דבר להשיב לבנות ירושלים עד למשיח נגיד שבועים ושבעה. From the time that the temple was built until the anointed one or the designated one or the special one or the one who will make a difference is seven sevens or 49 years. And then there is another 62 sevens or 434 years. We'll come to that in a minute. So what I'm looking for is, what is this 49? What is this 49? And 49 years after the construction of the temple is finished, puts us in year one of a very fascinating story, namely the beginning of the reign of King Asa. Now, if you've never studied the Book of Kings, a lot of what I tell you now is going to be unfamiliar territory. That's okay. Just have to kind of follow it with me, and I'll walk you through it. But part of the story, you know that Shlomo HaMelech was a disappointment. Shlomo HaMelech had his mistakes and tragic ones. And at the end of his life, God comes to him and says he's going to split the kingdom apart. And so there's a rift in the kingdom in the next generation, which is the generation of Rechavam, Shlomo's son. And from Rechavam, we have, we have Rechavam, and then you have another king by the name of Aviam, and then king of Judah by the name of Asa. So there's essentially four kings in this conversation: Shlomo, Rechavam, Aviam, and Asa. Why is that relevant? We'll see. I'll show you in a second. Quick calculation of numbers. Shlomo Melech reigns for 40 years. If Shlomo Melech reigned for 40 years, how many, it's a simple math question, how many years after Shlomo Melech built the temple was his reign until he, from start to finish? Meaning, if he reigned for 40 years and the temple was built, completed in year 11, that means that he reigned for how many years after the temple was built? 29. If you came up with 29, you're good. If you didn't, you're off by one. Plus one, minus one, in statistics, it doesn't matter. For 29 years of Shlomo HaMelech's reign. Rechavam reigns for 17 years. Aviam reigns for 3 years. So where does it put me 49 years after the temple is built? Beginning of the next king by the name of Asa. 29 plus 40 plus 17 plus 3 comes to 49. If I'm doing that correctly, I think that is that works. Comes to 48, and then Asa is year 49. So what does it tell me about Asa? So let me come to the following prophecy. Here's what we know about Asa. Let's jump to here. Vazayahu ben Oded, this is in Divrei Hayamim, I'm skipping one, so I'll come back to it in a second. Vazayahu ben Oded, I bow to Ruach HaLokim. Vayetze lifnei Asa, Vazayahu ben Oded, there was a prophet that comes to Asa and he says to him, Shimoni Asa b'chol Yehuda ben Yamin, listen to me. Hashem imachem, God is with you. Yodchem imo, if you will be with him. Pim titrushu yimatze lechem. If you will seek him, he will be found. And if not, he will forsake you. There were many years in Israel. Many years without God, true God or God worship, without priests to teach, without the law to observe. Meaning we're dealing with a time prior to Asa of one of those dips in the loyalty of Israel to God. Deep dip when the people had abandoned the temple and abandoned God and embraced idolatry in order to fit into the broader milieu in which they lived. And in the distress, they turned to God of Israel and he was found by them. I'm going to skip a little bit. This is all the words of the Navi. Be'atem chizkul, be strong, ve'ayit b'yedechem, don't slack, yesh zechar l'pulatchem, there is reward for your effort. When Asa heard these words, and he heard the words of the Navi, he was strong, and he removed all of the abominations, the Shukutsim, from the entire land of Judah, and from the land of Binyamin, and from all of the cities, and he united them, and he renewed the altar of Hashem that was before God. And he brought all of the people from Yudah and Benjamin, and even those who came from Ephraim and Manasseh and from Shimon, because many of them came to the temple. They brought them to Yerushalayim. And they brought sacrifices to God. They came and they made a covenant with God. An extraordinary effort to bring about this rejuvenation of spirit and loyalty to God. It was the very first time that they had taken this deep dip into idolatry in the period of the kings and had emerged from it under the leadership of Asa. We're literally 50 years after the temple had been built. Just to show you the extent to which this had gone, Gam Machar. Aim Asa HaMelech, Hesira Mikvira, Asa had to dethrone his mother, who had enthroned herself as king or queen, Ma'acha, Asher Astal Asherah Miflatzet, and she had made a terrible abomination, a monstrous abomination to Asherah, and she was the one who had driven all of this idolatry. And so Meichot Asat Miflatzta had to take down this Miflatzet and destroy it to dust in Nachal Kidron. That is the source of the word Miflatzet. If anybody's wondering where the word comes from, that is its source. It's not a playground. It's not just a playground in the in Yerushalayim. Anybody who's been there. All right. So Asa really has the status of being the first king of Israel to take Israel through this extraordinary process of tshuva, of redemption, of renewal, and he's 50 years after the building of the temple. So if I look at the building of the temple as kind of that starting point, the first time we take a deep dip, that first reach up actually is the beginning of the reign of Asa. And so it's appropriate to look at going back to Daniel to say that, okay, from the, after the temple was built until Asa, Mashiach, Nagid, the anointed one, and I'll show you what that phrase means in a second, Shavuim Shivaz, 49 years. And then from that point forward, the rest of the temple period is in shaky ground until you reach Shavuim Shishim Ishtar, until you reach the final stage of the week 40, 60, oh, 62 sevens, if you will. How does the numbers work out? This sevens is how many years?
434.
434 years. If you start counting from the first year of Asa, meaning if Asa is year one, then 434 years brings you to 1 year of the dedication of the second temple. How does that work? It works as follows. If you count, if you round off in terms of the Shemitah years, not exact years, 70 years of exile, 4 years of, what's the simplest way to calculate this? Well, let's do it this way. From Asa until the destruction of the first temple is how many years? 410 years because the temple stands for a total of 410 years, but it took 7 years to build. And so it's destroyed 403 years after it was built. So 403 years is the actual number of years it stood. And 403 minus 354 takes you to how many years?
49.
How many?
49.
No, from.
Try again.
If you start with. If you start from year. I worked that question backwards. Start from the year the temple is built, which is year 7. The total number of years the temple stands is 410 years. Asa is year 49. Asa starts in year 49. So from Asa until the temple is destroyed, it should be 354 years. Okay? Add to that the 70 years of exile. And then add to that Dayavesh, who is the one who allowed the temple to be built. The temple is completed in his fourth year. So if I add the 354 and the 70 years of exile and the 4 years of Dayavesh till the temple is built, I come to a total of 428. You know, you with me?
So far.
428 is somewhere inside the 62nd Shemitah cycle. The 62nd Shemitah cycle is a 7 year period that goes from year 427 to year 434. If you followed that, great. If you didn't, I can send it to you by email and work out. I didn't put the numbers on the source page. I apologize for that. But essentially, maybe I can do this by whiteboard. Let's see if I can do this by whiteboard. I'm not sure I can do it by whiteboard without stopping the sharing, but we'll see. No, I don't got to do this by whiteboard. No, I don't have it. But that's basically the number. The numbers work from year 49 of the temple, which is the first year of Asa, until the temple is destroyed. It's 354 years. Add the 70 years of exile and the 4 years of Dayavesh until the temple is built, and you get a total of 428, which is the 62nd Shemitah cycle. Right? Because there's seven, that's what we counted. We counted 7 year Shemitah cycles. So yes, it goes from year 427 to 434. So somewhere in there is that time period of the building of the second temple. That's more or less the concept. So if I start from Asa until the temple is built, I can work through these three sets of numbers, 770s, which is 490 years, 77s, which is 49 years from the temple's construction until the Asa year 1, and 62 Shemitah cycles takes me, which is 434 years, but sometime in that time period will be the year in which the temple is rebuilt, second temple. And from that perspective, essentially, the Nevuah to Daniel says to him, if I started from that first tshuva back in the days of Asa until the temple is finally built, these are the numbers that work through history. And the message to Daniel is essentially, we're almost there. You just have to be. That's one way of looking at it. I will just share with you one observation which I heard many years ago from Rabbi Dan. I have not seen it written up anywhere, but I just think it's fascinating. Asa has a unique position. In the days of Yeravam ben Nevat, do we find that the Navi comes to him And he says to him, while Yerevan ben Nevat, who was the one who took the northern kingdom away and worshipped and created the idols of the Agalim and Dan and Beersheva, Dan and Betel, there's a moment in which the Navi comes to him and says to him, Yerevan is standing on that Mizbeach offering incense to the idols that he had created. God calls him to the Navi and he says, Vayikala Mizbeach, Bitva Hashem, and he says to him, Mizbeach, Mizbeach, this altar, thus says God, Hine ben Malad the Beit David, Yoshiyahu Shmo, there will be a child born to the house of David. His name will be Yoshiyahu, and he will inaugurate a rejuvenation, a spiritual revival of the Jewish people, and he will destroy the altars to Baal, and he will destroy the altars to etc. And all hopes placed on Yoshiyahu. One of the great mysteries of this text is that Yoshiyahu was hundreds of years away. So what possible relevance does Yoshiyahu have to Yerevan ben Nevat when the kingdom is just newly inaugurated? So I heard once from Medan that this Yoshiyahu may be, in fact, a code for Asa. Why? Because if you look at Yoshiyahu here and you take away the letters of God's name from this spelling, you take out the yud, you take out this yud, you take out the vav, you take out all the letters of God's name from here, and you're left with aleph, shin, either aleph or hey, depending on what was there, shin and sin are interchangeable in Tanakh. And so if I took asa and I made and I added Shem Hashem to it, it would sound something like Yoshiyahu. And so in fact, this may be a reference to asa as well. All hopes were pinned on asa for whatever reasons asa, the spiritual revival didn't play out exactly as originally planned, but that was the anticipation. And so that would have been our starting point. And from there until the construction of the second temple, the numbers fit as described here. Option one, it's complicated in terms of numbers. It's complicated in terms of why go back to Asa. But at the same time, its advantage is that I'm not left with this message that the second temple is doomed from the outset. The message to Daniel is all about the time for when the temple will be rebuilt, which is just around the corner. It may be we've waited 400 and something years because we've waited from Asa for that opportunity. It's here now. You've gone into exile. You're about to come back. Another possibility altogether, I'm going to take us in a completely different direction. And that is ask the question, which is, all of the interpretations we've given up until this point have assumed that we're dealing, I want to stop sharing for a second, that we're dealing with years. What if we're not dealing with years? What if we're dealing with days? And a Shavua is a Shavua, meaning 7 days. But if we're dealing with days, then the message to Daniel is a very different one. If we're dealing with days, let's do a quick calculation. Let's see if I can do this on the whiteboard. Can I load a whiteboard here? Let's see if this works. Okay. You will see a whiteboard popping up. I've never used this technology before. We're trying it. Oh, come on. Can you all see that? Okay. All right, we're getting there.
Yeah.
All right. So now that's a simple text. Let's see if I can type this out. If we're dealing with 70 days or 77s, 70 weeks. So 70 weeks is 490 days. 490 days is in translates into how many years, more or less?
Maybe a year and a half.
Yeah, a year and a quarter.
Less?
Yeah, less, about a year and a quarter.
Year and a quarter.
Okay, year and a quarter. Let's just assume for a moment, a year and a quarter. If I take the numbers that Daniil mentions subsequent to that, which are the, or inclusive of that, if I will, 70 weeks plus 7 weeks plus 62 weeks, right? I get a total of, anybody want to do the quick math?
$139.
Okay, how many years?
All right, and then the next, I'll probably go over these quickly. The next ones are the...
Yeah. How many years?
139.
No, just...
139.
So it's just the...
Sorry, I'm just going to temporarily put everybody on mute, and then if you want to chime in, unmute yourself. Multiply that by 7 and then divide by 365, what do you get?
139 days.
No. 7 plus 62. You have to multiply that by 7. Right? And you get?
973.
Right. Now divide that by 365.
2.67.
Yeah, that's what I got. 2.67. So essentially what this message says to Daniil is, something's going to happen in about 77 or 70 weeks, which is about a year and a quarter. But know that it's on troubled foundation. And this troubled foundation is going to continue to about 70 or 62 weeks. For about 2.5, 3 years. It's going to happen, but it's on troubled foundation. Starts in about a year and a quarter, and it goes to about year 2.67. You understand what I'm driving at? In other words, let me stop sharing this. I just closed this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It can't prove.
Okay, so essentially what the message of this prophecy says to Daniil is, Daniil, you've been praying for the redemption. You took the 70-year moment, and you've been praying that this is the time that has to all come to fruition. That's the, you know, where is it? What is it? What's going on? Comes along the Malach Gavriel, and he says, Shavuim Shivim Nechtach. Wait a second. You started davening, from the moment you started praying, this message came out, Yitzilat Tachlunecha, and the message was, Shavuim Shivim Nechtach. There's still another 70 weeks to go. You think you're at 70, you're right, but the things don't happen in the historical process overnight. Things in the historical processes take time. So you got to give it a little bit more time. And a little bit more time is 70 weeks, another year and a quarter. Daniil, hang on there, you're almost there, another year and a quarter. But even then, after this year and a quarter, know that you were on shaky ground. Mashiach Nagid will be an anointed one, and he will make significant things are going to happen, but it's going to be a period of time that's going to be shaky, but Soka Itin, with troubled times, which through this period of 70 weeks and another 7 weeks and another 62 weeks, and you're still in troubled times. What are we talking about? What's going to happen in a year and a half from now, and then even worse, 3 years from now? And that's if I leave this literally as referring to weeks, meaning days, and not years, then the message to Daniil is, from the moment you started speaking, Daniil, no, God is ready. We're ready. Your prayers are being answered. But you got to give it a little more patience. You're not there yet. Another 70 weeks, another 7 weeks, another 62 weeks. It's troubled times. It's trying times. But we'll get there. What's happening in the next year and a half to 3 years? The answer to that question is we need to know where we are in history. Where are we in history? We're in the first year of Dayavesh Ben Achashverosh Mizera Madai. in the first year, and this dayavesh we talked about before, this dayavesh doesn't last very long. He's on the throne in Tanakh terms less than a year. Who takes over for him? Who takes over for him? Who's the next king in the Persian dynasty?
Koresh.
Koresh. Vishnat Achat L'Koresh Melech Paras. First year of Koresh, king of Persia. In accordance with the prophecy to Yirmiyahu. Yeh Hashem et Ruach Koresh Melech Paras v'yaver ko b'chol machut b'chol kam b'michtav. And he, Koresh, in year one, makes a proclamation. And in this proclamation, he says that God has given him dominion over all of these lands and charged him, pakad alai livnot mabayit v'yushalayim, to build him a temple in Jerusalem. And Koresh opens up the door to be able to rebuild the temple. All hopes on Koresh. Hail King Koresh, Cyrus, king of Persia, who was inspired by this moment. We'll talk about Koresh at length. Who was inspired by this moment to allow the Jews to return and build the temple. Mi bachem mikol amo yelokavimo v'yal in Yerushalayim, who from among his people has the courage, go back to Yerushalayim and build the temple, even at Beit Hashem Elokei Yisrael, because he is God in Jerusalem. And all of the people who live in the lands and all the people who live should all go back to his place. Yinasu on Shem Kamal. And he gives him gold and he gives him silver and he gives him a generous heart and all the materials to go and build the temple. All of that in year one of Koresh. Year one of Koresh is in relation to Shnat Achat L'Dayavesh, is how long? More or less, approximately?
A year and a half.
In other words, that's exactly what the Malach says to Daniel. Malach says to Daniel, we're ready. Where does it go? It's just, you have to be patient a little bit longer. It's going to be a year from now. It's going to be seven. It's going to be, it's just around the corner. 70 weeks, 790 days. Not precisely, but more or less. 70 weeks. Just give it time. Daniel buys it. And so that's part one of the message. But there's the second part of the message. Second part of the message is that these are troubled times. And things don't go smoothly. And redemption doesn't happen in a linear fashion. The Tedav v'taskel. No. That from this word forth, ad Mashiach Nagid, there will be another period of time of 7 weeks and of 62 weeks, and it will be built, and there will be a moat, and it will be Sokaitin, but in troubled times, and the entire enterprise will be founded on trials and tribulations, and after the 62 weeks, the Karet Mashiach, this anointed one Cyrus, will be cut off, will be no more. By the way, who is the first one to call Cyrus the anointed one? Yeshayahu, a famous prophecy that talked about his servant is the Koresh Mashiach Hashem, right? For the same reason, anointed, designated for a mission. So what happens 3 years later? So this we need to learn. We're not going to do it tonight. We're not going to do it in this course, but you need to know. For this, you need to know the rest of the story of Sefer Ezra. 3 years after Cyrus's declaration, and the Jews go back and they start to build the temple, the locals come to the population in Jerusalem and they start to make a whole tumult and they say to him, we want to build the temple with you. And the local indigenous population were not from the Jewish people, and the locals in Yerushalayim aren't comfortable with it, and they say to them no. And so they go and they say to Koresh, king of Persia, and this is all recorded in the book of Ezra and Perek Dalet, and they say to Koresh, the enemies of Judah heard that they were building the temple, so they come to Zerubbabel and they say to him, we want to build with you, and Zerubbabel says no, and so they start to go back to Koresh. They go and they hire counselors, and they go back to Koresh, and they say to Koresh that the Jews are rebelling. Well, you know what Koresh does? He shuts down the building of the temple. That's in year 3. And they'll have to wait until Dayavish, when Dayavish, this is a whole different discussion, but they'll have to wait until Dayavish before they will be able to rebuild the temple itself. So if Dayavish, if Koresh is year 3, corresponds to exactly that message that Daniel receives from the Malach Gavriel. He'll start in year 1, but then it's going to reach trials and challenges, team in difficult times. And by the end of 3 years, you don't know what it's going to look like. Know that the message to Daniel is simply this. The redemption is not a linear path. Redemption is a series of ups and downs. You're going to start, you're going to take a step back, you're going to start again, you're going to take a step back, you're going to have Cyrus, you're going to have Cyrus within the edict, then you're going to have Dayavish, then you're going to have Dayavish within the edict, then you're going to have the Ahasuerus somewhere in the middle of all of this. Redemption is not a linear path. But that doesn't mean you give up. It means you need to know that there's a trial and a challenge ahead, and that the path from here to redemption is a series of ups and downs. It's not going to go, you hear me, Daniel, you stand up and you offer a prayer, you say Al-Chet, you say, you clap Al-Chet a couple of times, you say Tshuva, you say Vidui, and everything is great. And where Mashiach comes in a flying carpet. Doesn't work that way. That doesn't mean that your prayers aren't answered. It doesn't mean the redemption's not beginning. And that's the message that the Malach comes to share with Daniel. The process starts here. The process starts with Koresh. What happens after that is an open book. And that book is yet to be written, he says to Daniel. And that's more or less the way I understand the end of this parak. It's cryptic because the story is still unfolding. It's totally, we already have prophecies that Daniel has seen and will see in the next chapter about the story of Alexander the Great and the story of Hanukkah and the potential that Hanukkah will have for them and when all that will take place. There's much to yet unfold. That's the message that the Malach gives to Daniel. Stay with it. The prophecy is coming. The fulfillment of that prophecy is coming. The potential for the redemption starts a year from now. It'll run into challenges 3 years from now. The rest is an open book that has not yet been written. And that's more or less about the most that I can make heads or tails of these numbers at the end of chapter 9.
Rabbi?
So, yes.
How long did Daniel live? Did he live to see all of this?
Well, according to, yes, I can assume he does. He lives to see part of it, at least. He lives until the latest prophecy we have in, actually, I should have shown you this before. The next chapter after Daniel Tet, the next chapter is that fateful third year of Koresh. And in that fateful third year of Koresh, after Koresh rescinds the edict, there, that chapter opens with Bishnat Shalosh B'Koresh Melech Paras. Daniel receives his prophecy, and this prophecy is such that Bayamim Mehem Ani Daniel Ayiti Mitabel Shlosha Shavuim Yamim. I, Daniel, was fasting for 3 weeks. Lechem Chamudot Lachalti Basavi Ayin Lobal Pi. I did not eat bread, or I did no pleasant bread. I did not eat flesh or wine or meat or wine. I did not anoint myself with oils for 3 weeks. By the way, from this reference to 3 weeks, the Shilta Gibbon was the only source I've seen that says, in this regard, says that this is the source for the Ashkenazic custom of 3 weeks of mourning rather than just 9 days at the beginning of the month of Av. because Daniel is mourning for 3 weeks because of the rescinding of the edict of Koresh. That's that fateful time period of 3 years from now, when Daniel saw in chapter 9, so 1 year from now we starve, and 3 years from now we run aground. That's what's going on in Yerushalayim, and here's Daniel sitting there watching it unfold, and he begins his fasting and his tefillah, and then of course he'll see a new vision, which we will talk about, please God, next week. But in answer to your question, Daniel himself, I think it says in the first parak of the second, that Daniel stood in the service of the king until the beginning of Koresh. So he saw the last years of Daniel that we have recorded. Did he live longer than that? We don't know. But he certainly lives to see the beginning of the years of Koresh. Whether he ever saw the temple built in the days of the Yavish, we have no evidence to. But that is the time frame in which he. All right, I hope that you were able to follow today's numbers. A little bit of a learning the technology, but I just want you to get a sense that if we shift this from years to days, the message becomes A, more relevant to Daniel, but more importantly, the message itself becomes very important for our whole perspective on Tanakh, the whole perspective on redemption, namely that redemption is there, it's within our grasp, but it's not a linear path, and it's always filled with ups and downs, steps forward and step back. Hopefully, we always take more steps forward than we take steps back. And with that, we will end today's class. I thank you for listening. I will end the recording here.
Whoops. Thank you very much.
Rabbi, next week in the U.S., it's a holiday. Are we having